Good afternoon. Welcome to the second to last C++ session in the conference. My name is Tarek Madkour. I'll be talking to you about how to build metro-style applications using C++, specifically focusing on how to do that using the XAML UI framework. Just a little background about myself. I work on the Visual C++ team back in Seattle, and I focus on the C++ compiler, libraries, and IDE. For about the last 10 years, I've worked on the different areas of Visual C++, and for the past 2 years, I've been strictly focused on Windows 8 and what we're doing for Windows 8. It was hard not to be able to talk about it for a long time and have to hide my laptop from my wife when I go home because nobody's allowed to see it. But it's finally great ever since last September when we showed it to everybody to be able to come and talk about it. So today I'll just give you a glimpse of what we've been working on and how you can actually make use of that to create applications. So I can tailor the session for the audience, how many are C++ developers? Almost everybody. Okay. And how many of you came to either the Windows runtime session or like the Metro style session? Only a few. How many came to my presentation yesterday where I talked a little bit about some of that? Very, very few. Okay. So I should actually go give you a quick recap of what this is about before we start. The agenda for today was just showing you XAML and C++ and demos and Visual Studio and staying most of the time in Visual Studio and how to use it, to create metro-style applications. Very few slides, lots of time in Visual Studio writing code and editing stuff. We're going to do that and that and that and then some more of that. What I really want you to get out of it is how to build a metro-style application using C++ from the time you do a file new project to the time that you put it on an app store. What does that life cycle look like, and what are the different things that you will need to go through? But before I actually do that, I actually need to just spend a little time talking about metro-style applications. So the best thing to do is to bring a couple of the slides that I hadn't put in this presentation, but I think are going to be useful for you to see. So I'll just spend a couple more minutes on this first. If you were at my presentation yesterday, you probably already saw this one, these two next slides. So metro-style applications are those applications for Windows 8 that will enable you to have a touch-first experience. Think of an application that you're going to use on a tablet, possibly also on a laptop or on a desktop, but generally what makes them different from the rest of Windows 8, Windows 7 and before applications that we have today is that they're very focused on a touch experience. How can you create an application that you use your fingers to work with as opposed to a mouse or a keyboard? Those applications are available through a start menu that looks like this. This laptop, for example, has Windows 8, so here I am. This is my equivalent start screen. These are applications that you get from the App Store. You touch one of those, it starts, takes the full screen, and you're running in it. You also get the normal desktop applications in Windows 7. In this case, for example, I'm running, the regular PowerPoint that we've been using from before. So, Windows 8 can run both kinds of applications. Today, I'll strictly focus on the touch-first applications that you get from that big menu. I'll start at it from the bottom up. This is sort of what Windows 8 looks like from an API perspective. We have the core layer of Windows at the bottom there in green. Okay, and that's Windows as it's always been, the core services of Windows. The kernel and the UI, all of that stuff continues to exist, right? Threading, everything is just the same, improved. Just like with every version of Windows, we add more to it. On the right side there, you'll see desktop applications using the stacks that you're already familiar with. Whether you've been using Win32 and C and C++, how many use .NET already? Half, okay. So, whether you're using .NET or Silverlight and using a language like C# or VB or even C++ CLI if you really wanted to, or whether you're creating a web page that, runs on top of IE, that runs on top of Windows. All of these are what we consider desktop applications. They will continue to run. But we enable a new class of applications right here in the middle, which is those applications that will be deployed in the application store that a user can go, a customer can go and buy. And then you as a developer, all you need to do is build one of those applications, deploy it to the app store, and then wait for your check for the, you know, the $1 million that are going to come to you every month. That's sort of how it works. At least that's the promise. So what did Windows expose in that middle center? It exposed the bottom layer called the WinRT APIs, Windows Runtime APIs. It's another set of APIs in addition to Win32, and they're a new set of APIs available strictly to Metro-style applications. They cover the whole gamut from, you know, the application model, how you communicate, even include things like the UI layer. And they're accessible from three classes of languages. Native languages, C and C++. You get primary support for it. If you hadn't attended my session yesterday about how to actually make the call from C and C++ down to WinRT APIs, I encourage you to go and look at that over video. You'll find it useful. You can do the same from C# and VB. C# and VB can access WinRT APIs without having to go through something crazy like pinvoke or cominterop. They know how to deal with it natively. And JavaScript also knows how to deal, you know, talk to WinRT. Strictly, I'll focus on C and C++. We have a new UI framework called the XAML framework. Anybody does Silverlight or WPF already? So for the two of you that do, you will find it familiar. For everybody else, I'll talk a little bit more about what XAML is. XAML is basically a new declarative UI. It's XML-based, you know, markup. It allows you to natively access the UI layer of Windows 8. And basically going through XAML, you can create a C++ application that gets published to the App Store. And today, I will strictly focus on that part. You can also go, you know, from C++ and create Windows 8 applications in different ways. And I'll sort of, I'll skip this one. I'll show you, you know, these are the kinds of applications that you can create for Windows 8. Thinking about that middle part, the touch-first applications, the Metro-style applications, there are three kinds that kind of make sense for a C++ developer. The top kind is the one I'll spend the time on today, which is XAML-based applications. You have a XAML user interface with a lot of C++ code inside. And all of that is 100% native. There is no, you know, I know people who are already thinking about XAML might be thinking, you know, WPF or Silverlight. It's the same markup technology, but underneath, it's 100% native. This is part of Windows, part of the Windows APIs, completely native C and C++. And there are APIs available to you to call. There is also a way to do DirectX. Anybody that does DirectX programming already? No one. Okay. DirectX is a very nice way to do 2D and 3D graphics, very famous in the gaming world, also very famous in the CAD world, or basically for anybody who's looking for UIs that are less about, you know, controls that have specific shapes or even look a little nice, but rather objects that you directly manipulate. You know, imagine you have a globe and you're rotating that globe to find the country and then you're clicking it, you know, touching it, you know, finding that place and tapping it, as opposed to selectors that say which continent and where to go. So DirectX is more geared to that kind of application. And DirectX is totally available from C++. And you can create Windows 8 Metro-style applications using DirectX as well. And finally, even for, you know, the new thing that we're exposing in Windows 8, which is HTML5 and JavaScript programming that can also result in Metro-style applications, we've engineered it in such a way that JavaScript knows how to talk to any WinRT component. And a primary supplier of WinRT components can be C++. So if you have a, you know, thinking of creating an application with a very simple interface and you think HTML5 might be it, use that, use JavaScript for your presentation, use even JavaScript for your logic if that makes sense. And where performance or power is necessary, drop down to C++ and you can have a very great interoperability that way. All right? So that was the 5 or 6 minutes overview that I felt was important just to so you understand what we're going to talk about today. So with that, I'll go back to our presentation. All right. So first I'll start by showing you a demo of an app that I'll be using throughout this talk, which is an app that I'll show you in its complete form, and then we'll rewind and start from a middle place, and I'll show you how to design parts of this application and how to add code to parts of this application. Okay? So So this is the complete form. So this is a music application, pretty much a piano. I can go over this. Anybody likes classical music? Wants to hear me play classical music? All right. So this application, might look like a very simple application. It's just a piano. You can do that in anything, pretty much. What do you need C++ for there? Well, there's... one of the features of this application is you can do what's called listening mode, okay? So you can go there, click on a song, and the notes on the song keep flying down, and then you can use the piano to play those notes. It tells you what it's getting up there on the right and what is being played, okay? So I'm playing a C, I keep playing Cs, Bs, okay? And I'm supposed to try to match the right one. And we could have done some very simple matching of, are you pressing the right keys when the right notes are coming. And instead of doing that, we're actually trying to loop back through the microphone. So we actually play the sound through the audio and hear it back through the microphone and do the analysis that way. And why that complication? Well, the complication is because we expect that we would want this, for example, to be on a tablet. And then, say, a musician would put that tablet on their piano. And instead of actually using this crummy piano to play, they just play with the real piano. These notes are flying down, and they're playing with the real piano. And you're doing analysis of, what kind of notes are coming and how close you are, how good you are to doing that thing. Now, that real-time audio analysis of notes is not the simplest thing to do, and you need some performance for that, for it to all continue to play while things are going down, while it's listening and doing the music. Some threading in the background is pretty interesting. So for that, we thought you need C++. C++ is a language pretty well tailored for that kind of stuff. Okay, so that's why we thought this was a good idea to do that application in C++. Another good reason to do this application in C++ might be that, hey, you know what? I've already developed this application maybe on another platform. Maybe I have an iPad version of this application or something. I've got some chunk of C++ code that I want to move forward. Well, guess what? C++, very nice thing about it is that it's portable cross-platforms. You can take things and move them that way. Okay. Obviously, you're going to have to tweak UI layers and probably tweak some things to make them work in Windows. But at least it's a good way to get some portability. All right, well, that was the demo of the end result of the application and what we want it to be like. Let me close that version of Visual Studio that had the final version and go back to our presentation. Okay. So I talked a little about why I want C++ for this app in specific. It boils down to how user expectations are continuing to rise. A while back, users expected simple applications and could live with, kind of acceptable performance. Now you're seeing a lot of devices, and devices put stress on how much your application can run, how much power it can consume. People don't generally like applications that drain all their battery, for example. People like applications that are responsive. They're expecting that things are going to be a lot more interactive. They're expecting that things are going to be instantaneous. And with these rising user expectations, for us developers, the bar is just rising about how much pain we can let the users go through. Maybe in the past the tolerance for pain was higher. That tolerance for pain is really starting to get reduced. So people are demanding quality applications. People are demanding performance. Your apps are going to be reviewed in an app store with people putting a 1-star or a 5-star on it. Everybody wants the 5-star so you can get reviewed, so you can get money for your application. It just makes it more important that you demand that last inch of power and the best user experience. So I'll divide the rest of the talk into two halves. First, I'll talk about designing. How do you design the UI for something like this? And then I'll talk about, implementing and how you write the code. Before I go into the designing part of it, who works on a GUI part of an application? You do some UI, okay? Who does that in C++? Okay, most of you. Okay, MFC. love the resource editor in MFC? No, okay. I didn't think you would. Okay, so here's this is you know I'll borrow a statement. Anybody who was at Jim's talk yesterday who was talking about what's new in Visual C++? Oh yeah. Well, I'll borrow a phrase that Jim used yesterday. This is not your grandfather's designer. He used it for something else, but I'll use it for a designer. This is not your grandfather's designer, and in the U.S. that pretty much means that this is not the kind of designer you're used to. This is way, way, way better. Really cool. So. We'll go from there. XAML, I'll talk about XAML a little bit. So XAML is the new way to express your UI, okay? That's what we've selected for C++ as the way to go. It's the same way that we're going for C# and for VB as well. So pretty much the technology is coming out of Microsoft. We're uniting in that direction of HTML5, a standard thing, or XAML, a Microsoft-specific thing, really, really, really powerful. So what does XAML provide you? Think about, if you're familiar with MFC, RC files, only really, really powerful RC files, and ones that have very good tool support as well. XAML is very expressive. It allows you to do things like layout very easily. And remember in the days, who has ever, had to fidget with like an OK button and a cancel button and make sure that they're lined up exactly in the right spot and like spent, half an hour or an hour to just get that? Well, XAML has this property that says, this one, always keep it on the right, and this one, always 5 pixels from it, please. That's it. And then you resize things, you move things, you do whatever it is, that stays where it is. Done. Even at runtime, it will stay where it is. It's very nice properties like that at both design time and at runtime that make it very simple for you. Who struggled with on or draw buttons? Try to make a button that looks, nice. Okay, there you go. Quite a few. You don't have to do that. XAML actually provides a very nice way of skinning things using configuration. So you don't want to make the button circular with an image, and when you hover over it, it does something, turns a different color. Pretty easy to do. So XAML is a very, very powerful UI declarative model. So that's why we went for it. The other thing about it is we already have tooling support for it in Visual Studio. We've had technologies, WPF and Silverlight. They were only available to the .NET world over the past 5 years or so. For those, we had built some good tools, whether it's the tools integrated in Visual Studio, like a designer. You double-click on the XAML file, and you can design things drag and drop. Or even standalone tools that not geared for developers, but geared for a designer person, somebody who doesn't like to see your code. How many have struggled with, a picture sent from somebody telling them, please make a UI that looks like that picture? Now you don't need to do that. They can just have a tool geared for designers, draw things in it, doesn't have a single line of code. Then you go just open that same file in Visual Studio, it works. That now you can just add that to your project, and you're done. They can actually go and open your project, only see the design part, play with that, close it. Now when you open your project, you have it. So it's a very nice workflow. And we're using that same workflow into the C++ world. We've only made it one thing better, which is it's 100% native. You don't need to worry about that. It's 100% native. So for us C++ developers, it's a big thing. So if you are a WPF or Silverlight developer, and I saw a couple of you that were, you'll be happy to know that basically your knowledge translates. It is not 100% exact. You can't exactly copy the code and paste it and expect to change nothing, but you can copy the code and paste it and expect to change very little, which is a good thing. All right, the designer pretty much exposes the full functionality of the XAML framework. It shows you how to save resources and use them in a different part of the UI. If the designer has a special color code that they like you to use and you want to use that same color code everywhere, you don't have to go remembering hexadecimal values. You can just save resources and say, apply this to all of these buttons, for example. The layouting mechanism, all of that, already built into the designer. So it's a very rich designer framework. Not only does it have a very rich designer, but I think one of the coolest things about it, especially for people who are very comfortable with coding, like most of us C++ developers are, is that XAML is also very editable by hand. And the way that the designer works, and you'll see that in the demo, is it's kind of a split screen. You have a designer, and you have the XAML markup at the bottom. You drag and drop in the designer, the markup changes. You go and edit the markup directly, the designer changes. 100% works both ways. So you can have precise control through code if you want. Code gets you IntelliSense, gets you everything. Or you can just drag and drop and edit. It's a very, very powerful thing. So enough talking. Let's do some demos again, okay? So this is the same Magical Music app, only you'll notice that I have taken a piece of it out. Let me run that one for you. I've taken one piece of the UI out, and I'm going to show you how we actually built that piece of the UI and put it in. Did I forget to run? No, I did not. Sorry. It's the same app. You'll notice that there's no song up in the top, and there's no play button to play the song. All it has is just the piano. Also, you will notice that the piano doesn't play fluently as it did. It kind of hung on me. And this is, you know, when everything, when anything hangs, this is supposed to be the time where the presenter panics. Luckily, this was actually intentional. So this is an okay hang. So we're going to go in the first part, we're going to add that piece of design. In the second part, we're going to make it more fluent in the UI. Okay? Now let's close this. Back here, I'm going to stop debugging. Okay. So this is the designer. Okay? Pretty much looks like the screen that you saw. So it's what you see is what you get. On the bottom is the markup that is used. So if you look in here, this is the markup that creates this. Those of us who've actually played with XAML for a while, it becomes like second nature editing XAML after a while. You get pretty proficient at it. You can click on something here, and it will show you where it is in the markup. Ah, did I do that? Please don't do that. All right, we have a funny piano now. This is not exactly where it is. That's okay. Okay, so the first thing I'm going to do is try to see how to add that play button and the song name and the little picture and all of that to this existing design. Okay, so I'm going to use the designer to do that. So there are a couple of windows that you're going to need to activate in Visual Studio. I hid them here by default just so that I can get a chance to show them to you one by one so that you know which windows you're going to need. The first one is the toolbox. Okay, so I'm going to go here, view toolbox. And that toolbox has all the controls that XAML understands, frequent ones on top, but quite a few of them down here, quite a bit, lots of controls. One of the best things about XAML is very rich set of controls, all right? The toolbox is also searchable, so if you want to do something, you can just search at the top of the toolbox. It's the same toolbox that we actually use for MFC, just only nicer and searchable. Next, you're going to need a document outline window. Okay? It comes from here. View other windows, document outline. And that window, I'll pin it as well. If you think of your UI as a tree hierarchy, you know, I have a list view, and inside that list view, there are three panes, and this pane has an image, but that pane has a button. So it's more or less a hierarchy of things. This is a very nice way of just navigating that hierarchy. The UI on this thing is not final. I mean, that designer was pretty much put in place for that September build that we issued last time with a lot of duct tape around it. So it kind of barely works, and I have to navigate. And in my script, I have to know exactly where to go so it doesn't crash. So if you're using that September build, it's quite an old build. But the one that we'll be getting out in the beta is actually significantly better. So while I'm working here, you'll find some things, you know, taking a little bit of a while, and or something crashing on the way. Don't worry. It's understandable. You know, I've dealt with it for the past few months. It's all better in the beta. And I already have the beta bits, but I'm not allowed to show them. But, you know, it's already there. Okay. And the last window you're going to need is the properties window. And properties window used to be one of the windows that I really hated about Visual Studio because it was so hard to edit anything in. It was basically, who's used the property grid in Visual Studio already? Okay. You know, finding something in the property grid just to, you know, basically key value pairs is what it is. And you try to look for it and line things up. It's so hard. Well, not for XAML, really. OK? because XAML has a really nice property grid with things that look like that and colors that you can pick, and it's actually pretty nice. I'll maximize this so you can see it. So it's pretty editable and also searchable. So you can just type here if you're looking for something, you can find it. Okay. So these are the windows you're going to need. Now let's start by dragging and dropping some stuff. First thing I'm going to do is get a list view to put all the songs in. Okay. So I'll go find the list view here in the search. I'll type list. There's a list box and a list view. I'll get the list view. And I'll go here. I'll drag and drop. Okay. And one of the things I want to do here, for example, is make that list view fill the whole parent area it's in, right? Don't need to go writing numbers or dragging and dropping with, you know, elite ninja skills to drag the place in the right spot. You could just right-click, say auto size, fill. That's it. Fills the space. Okay, you're good. Now inside that list box, let me give it a name. So I can go here in the document outline. Sorry, I have everything, you know, sort of expanded to maximum resolution. You know, typically you'll get a little more real estate than what I'm showing here. So we can go here and right-click and do rename. And let's call that, you know, our song box list. Okay? So you'll see that automatically here got renamed into song box list. So whatever I'm doing from the windows around or from the designer gets updated in the XAML. I could go edit this in the XAML and the others would refresh too. Okay, so I added sort of a list. If I, you know, expand that. Okay, now I want to add one item to that list. Okay, so I'm going to go here, do that in XAML. It's just easier to do in XAML, okay? So I'm going to do this, and you'll see I'm already getting auto-completion and IntelliSys in the XAML. Once I close the angle bracket, it fills the rest for me. I'll go inside and start with a list view item, okay? Let's do list view item, okay? With a height equals 100. Okay? So I have a new item inside. I can actually go here and expand it. And it's right there. If I click on it, you see it right here with a height of 100, right? So now I have that list view. I want to go inside that list view and make it into three columns. The first column is going to have the picture of the artist. The second column is going to have the song name. And the last column is going to have a play button, okay? So how do I do something with columns? We have a control for that called a grid. So I'm just going to put a grid inside this. One of the nice features of the designer is that it's very easy to use with the mouse and keyboard and to pan and zoom and do things like that. So here, for example, I can go use the scroll mouse scroll button and, sorry, let's go on the designer and do a scroll in, scroll out. Okay. I can bring this, if I click space, you get a hand that you can pan things around so you can move. So you're working in a nice area that you're working with. It's a very modern, nice designer, you know. Then I can go on the grid, drag that grid here. And if you see, you know, while I'm doing that, you're getting those green, red lines that tell you how much of a margin you have, and you're showing the sizes and all of that. So as you're dragging and dropping, you understand the sizes of the things that you're doing, okay? I'll go on this, and on a grid, you can add columns. So I'll make the grid a three-column grid. Okay, here's one column. And notice how the XAML is going to change at the bottom while I'm doing that. Here's one. And maybe here's another. Okay? It has the sizes of them on top, but these are kind of percentages, the way they are now. I can go change that and look at things in pixels, raw pixels. Let's say my designer told me, you know, this one has to be exactly 70 pixels, and this one as well. So I can go here and make those pixels and start moving that down to something close to 70. Okay? Anyway, there's good enough. You know, I don't have to be exact today. Okay, this, I'll get this up to 100. Okay? So, I can modify things. I can go in again, and now let's put an image. Okay? I'll put an image here, also use those guides to fill it in the image box. Now I can go here in that property grid and pick the source image for it. It's a very nice editable property grid there. I'll put a picture of Lee Morgan. So you get that there. And then I put a text block. Okay, now I want the song name. Let me get text. Now that text block, you know, see, I can't see anything in it. And the reason for that is the default for text blocks is actually a white background. You know, the text is actually white. But I've modified this form and made it white background as well. So white on white doesn't really show. Let's go and change the color. So I can go here, make it red, make it blue. Or let's say my designer actually gave me a specific code to use. So in this change, I will use a specific designer code. Okay? So this makes it that really nice shade of gray that people from Seattle love because it represents the sky all the time. You know, so this is, you know, what we're going to go with, the Seattle gray sky. In fact, I'm going to use this color quite a bit, so I'm going to save it so I can use it later instead of having to remember that hex value. Okay? So I'll go here and say convert this color to a resource. Give it a name. Seattle gray. Okay? And I keep getting confused if gray is with an E or an A, so I just pick one at random. Sorry if that offends you if I picked the wrong one. All right, so now this is a beautiful Seattle gray color. I can go and change the font for this as well in the text part. Expand that. Let's say I change the font to Sego UI Light. See, you get like preview of the fonts as with any standard thing now. I'll make that a font 22. Okay, so now I have a nice text block. I can add another text block. You know, let's put something inside this. We'll call this song. Okay? And then after that, I can add another text block. If I double click on it, did I add it in the wrong spot? Sure I did. I'm sorry. Back to the pointer. I have my text box here. I can go to the text block and add it. And now, if I wanted to use the same color, I can go and pick from the colors that we have, and it's using the same color, right? Now, finally, I want to add the play button, okay? So here's a button. I can drag that here as well. And one of the things that I had done before this presentation is actually created a button style. I'm not going to show you how to create one here. It's actually pretty simple. And save that button style. And this makes this, instead of a normal button with text on it that you click, it makes it an image that, you know, it takes an image resource as opposed to a text. So pretty straightforward. So I'll go here inside that button. Look for the style. I can't remember exactly where you set the style from, but I can search. So I can go here, type style. I typed it. It's going to take a while to show up. There you go. So now in style, I can click on style. and use one of the local resources, which is the image button. This is one of the ones that I had created. Okay. Then now, this one, I could just drag and drop an image inside. And fill it in there. Let me clear this. So now I can select the source of the image to be my play 2. Picture. Okay. So now I have a button with this. Now I want to hook this button up with my codes. The simplest way to do that is an event handler. So I'm going to go into the events and do that. Let's select that button. Well, one of the nice things about XAML is that you can actually, if there are a number of things on top of each other, you don't know how to select them because, you know, it's a pretty much a tree. You know, you want to select the stack panel that's behind that thing. You can click the control and right click on something, and it's going to show you a list of what is there. Okay? And you can just select the one you want. So I'm going to select the button. Okay? So on the button, I'm going to select the click event, and on that, I'm going to call it on play song. Press enter. And that is going me to create a method in my class and put things on it. Okay? Now I should be able to build this. And if I've done everything right, we should be able to run it. When you click on the button, nothing is going to happen because that code is still empty. We're going to do that later. But at least we should be able to see that nice UI go along. Now, while it's building, I wanted to take a moment and show you a couple of things. The first thing I wanted to show you is what gets generated by the XAML file. For every XAML file that we have, I can go and expand on it here, and it has a CPP and a header file. When you do a file new project, and I'll go through that later on, when you do a file new project, you actually get two XAML files created, one that has an empty page for you, and one that does some, like the running of the application. And those, when you compile a XAML, what happens is it generates CPP and header files for you. So if you really wanted to, you don't actually have to write XAML, because what happens to XAML is that it gets compiled into code, and that code gets linked into your application and runs with your application. So if you really didn't want to do the, if you really thought that, you know, it's really easier to go and write code to create something as this, then you could do that. It probably makes sense for, you know, a form with just a button, maybe, and you could do that. If you wanted to, you can completely skip designing through XAML. You can just create a runtime class and run it, which is what the XAML compiler does. Or you can go through the XAML route. Okay, now let's run this. Here you go. The thing that we've designed is there. It continues to play music poorly, and you click, it doesn't do anything. But you can see the layout that we did. Looks exactly how we put it out on the screen, right? Well, let's go back to Visual Studio, stop that. And all right. So I've showed you how to use the designer. This is just basically a recap. The most important parts are visual editing, drag and drop, lots of tools around you, very easy to use. You can just take what the designer did and load it in your project if you're working with a designer. And of course, you can drop down to XAML for manual editing. Okay? Any questions before I move on from the design part to the coding part? Yes? The question was, can you use Blend to design your UI? Yes. So Blend is what I was referring to when I said there's another tool that is more focused to designers, that they could just load your project in, do the designs, save it, then you can open the project again in Visual Studio and see the modified designs. This tool is called Expression Blend. It's a tool that comes from Microsoft as well, and with the developer preview, you actually get, I don't think you get a version of Blend yet. Maybe you did. Can't remember. It was a while back. But you will be able to, yes. The goal is you have version of Blend that a designer could use, or if you are more familiar with a nice design tool you could use, and you could also do the design in Visual Studio. Good question. More questions? All right. So now let's go to the coding part of it. Okay. I'll go very briefly, since many of you were not at my talk yesterday, about a new set of language extensions that we've created to make it possible for you to call the Windows runtime. It's actually possible for you to call the Windows runtime without any language extensions. You can use a template library called WRL that we added for Windows 8. It's actually the template library used to develop Windows. And it's pretty straightforward, looks much like ATL, but you need to understand the guts of how the Windows runtime works to use it. So it's verbose and not the easiest thing to work with, but it's pretty much, you know, no language extensions, plain vanilla library, a template library that you can use. But we thought we want to make it easier for people. You know, they want to be able to type, you know, class foo inherits from bar, as opposed to lots of templates and aggregation and strange code. And so we added a couple of language extensions, and the goal for these language extensions was to map directly to the new types that were created by the Windows runtime. They have a new, you know, set of vectors, for example. They have new collections. They have a new string type. They are very specific about what types can be passed to the Windows APIs. And one of the goals was for these types to be used in any of the languages. So we didn't want to pick a type set from one specific language, be it C++ or C# or VB or JavaScript, and force everybody to use that. Instead, we created something that we thought was going to work right for the Windows runtime, and then had every language map to that in the best way that it can. So for us, we do a lot of simple, you know, translation and conversion, sometimes automatic. For example, you know, a C++ int automatically gets across the wire and gets understood by WinRT as what it needs. Something else, we give you a converter for, like a vector, for example. You can move from a standard vector to a WinRT vector. So, you know, we make it easy for you that way. But the key thing to remember is that those WinRT types are supported in the language through this set of extensions. And I'll walk you a little bit through the extensions as we go through. Two things to know about the extensions. Number one is that they are ref counted. So any of the classes that you create, there's a ref count too, so you don't actually have to delete it. You just knew it, and you know, as many times you're assigning things to it, people are pointing to it, we hold a ref count of that, much like COM. And when nobody's using it, we destroy it. It's a deterministic finalization, it's not garbage collection. You know, it's not like when nobody's using it, we'll figure out the right point in time to destroy it. No, last person stops using it, it's gone. So it's pretty much like COM in that regard. The other thing is we have an exception-based model on top of it. So there are H results happening under the covers, but to you as a C++ developer, you create a class. If something, you know, if you want to return a value, you return it in the return value of that method, and if there is an error, you throw. So let me show you a demo of the code that's underlying that application. Go back to our application. Okay, this is the header file behind that XAML page. And if you look at that header file, it has the homepage class. It says ref class, which says it's a WinRT class. Okay, it's a ref counted class. And that tells the compiler to do all the magic needed such that it does ref counting as opposed to traditional C++ creation and lifetime management. And from there, you just basically have methods. The pointers, instead of pointers, we use handles. So that hat, so you see song hat symbol, that says it's a handle to something. Anybody use C++ CLI before? A few? Okay. It looks very familiar to you if you're a C++ CLI developer. The only differences are, number one, it has nothing to do with .NET. No, there's no .NET running in the background here. It's 100% native C++. It gets compiled to x86 or 64-bit or ARM. And the other difference is there are a number of things in .NET that, in C++ CLI, that we added specifically for .NET that don't make any sense here in the Windows runtime, like, you know, GC roots and pin pointers and things like that. So these don't exist. But if you've learned C++ CLI, you will also find that this looks familiar from a syntax perspective. The semantics are different because this is a different type system and what's happening under the covers is very different. There's a lot less magic going on with this one than with .NET. All right? So I'm going to go and find that event handler that we just added. One of my favorite features of Visual Studio is Navigate To. I get it with a control comma. You can also get it probably from View Menu somewhere or the Edit Menu. I think it's the Edit Menu. Edit, Navigate To. Here we go. And you could just type the name of any method or a name of any file and hit Enter, partial name of any file, and it will just go to it. And I think we called it On Play Song. Here we go. Enter. Okay. So now here we are. And under On Play Song, I already had already added before the demo a couple lines that basically get the file name for the song. You know, gets the index of the list box that called it, and from that index, it has an array and finds out the file name for that. Since we only really had one song added in this demo, I could have just put that in directly. So I have the code for this saved here, so I'm just going to add that. Okay. So what I'm doing here is, this is a little bit of that language extensions that I was telling you about. They're called C++ component extensions. If you hear that word, this is what this is referring to. So you're doing, you know, you have a current song and you're going to say new song. Instead of new, you're just saying ref new. So ref counted thing. And what you're getting is a handle. And then I'm going to say current song load. Okay. This is an asynchronous API, so it's going to load in the background. And the way that it tells you that it's done is through a completed event. So you could actually, before you call load, say current song loaded, completed event, and add a function pointer that's going to listen to this. And in this case, I have added my, one of my methods here, homepage :: on song loaded. Okay, so on song loaded is going to get called when this function, the one below it, terminates. Okay. And then I'm going to go to onSongLoaded, which is conveniently right above it, and do the work to play this on the canvas. So here, basically, I have already a player page instance, and I'm going to say make that active and run it. Okay. And the last thing was, remember how that music wasn't playing fluently. It would play one note, stop, play another note, stop, not like the one that I had demoed in the beginning. And that's because I'm playing it on the main UI thread. So if I go to, I'll use my favorite feature again, wave file :: play. There you go. If you go there, you'll see that this is running on the UI thread, and I just go and say, play instance play. Yeah, go ahead, go do it. Which is fine, but when that playing that file takes half a second or a second, that's a second of pause in the UI. The rest of the piano is not responsive. Typically, if you're actually playing notes of music, you want them to overlap a little bit, so you might want to press a key, another key, or two keys at the same time. How do you do this? So you need to play it in the background. The only reason I didn't add it and I wanted to show it to you is I'm going to use one of the Windows Runtime APIs to add that, okay, to make it run in the background. So the Windows Runtime exposes a thread pool API. We're going to basically ask that thread pool to spin something up in the background. I'll use the object browser to remember exactly the name of the API to call. So here's View, Other Windows, Object Browser. And there I could just type thread pool. I think. Thread. It already has everything indexed, so it's not going to waste time looking for it. So here's a thread pool class, and inside that it has a run async with it. Okay, so that's what I'm going to use. So go back to my file, and I'm going to comment this one out, and instead put some nice code. So here what I'm doing is I'm creating a new work item handler and that is going to take one of my methods, okay? And it's going to say, call it back from any context, whether UI or anywhere, okay? That's what it's basically saying. You have a function pointer, you could do a lambda instead if you wanted to, and go and say, use that to spawn it in the background. It's one of the new WinRT APIs. And then you go ahead and say, start it, okay? So with that, I think we should have something that works. Any questions in the meantime about C++ component extensions or about the language? It's all clear? Clear as mud, as we say? Okay. All right, let's run this. All right. Here now I should be able to do this. More fluently again, right? And of course I could do play and it would do the same thing. So basically now we came back to the first place where we wanted to be. Okay? Yeah. We had somebody actually try to do it by voice and see if it would recognize their voice. F sharp. F sharp. F. That doesn't work with me. All right. So let's go back. Okay, stop this. So I showed you how to run it in the debugger. You know, one of the nice things about the Metro-style applications is that they take your full screen. You can reuse that whole space, very, very big for your application. One of the disadvantages to you as a developer is your app runs in full screen. You actually like Visual Studio to run in full screen. Two full screens at the same time maybe kind of works, but what if you have one? How does it work? Also, let's say you wanted the application to respond to, you know, a device where it can be rotated. You know, you're working on a desktop. How do you do that? You know, your desktop doesn't have touch. How do you simulate touch? So do you have to just always debug on a device? Can you debug on the desktop? Well, both are possible. And here's how they are possible. So here in debugging, this is the start the debugger. By default, it's local debugging. One of the things that we added as well is two other kinds of debugging. A simulator debugger, which makes it run in a simulator, or a remote debugger that basically you have a device and you attach it to your desktop or your laptop somehow and you can debug on that device. So let's do the simulator and see what that looks like, okay? If you look at how the simulator is done, and I might have done something here that is funny, I hope I didn't. The simulator is actually implemented as a loopback to your local machine. So it actually, it's a sort of a local TS session to your machine that starts another version of, you know, another console and runs your application in that console. The way that I log in is kind of a funny way. So I'm because I'm not on corporate network anymore, so I use a funny way to log in. And that sometimes make this guy not happy. So I'm hoping he will be happy today. I'm sorry. I clicked the wrong button. Okay, well, it's taking longer than I wanted to. So basically the way that loopback works is it does a local TS and it works that way. If it were running, I would have showed you that it actually has a couple of buttons on the side. One of them that says, you know, emulate touch, start touch now. So now you can use your mouse and you're sending touch messages instead of mouse messages. You can also do things with multi-touch like pinch and zoom or rotate or things like that. And there are buttons for that as well. Now, in addition to that, there are also buttons to rotate the screen or to do similar things. Yeah. Stop it. Give it another try. Maybe it'll work this time. I think. Let's see. Let's see if we'll luck out. Okay. Let's start it again. I killed the whole simulator. We're going to start it again. Maybe it will work. Last time I try. while it's actually trying this, I wanted to show you a couple of things that we've added that I thought were really nice features in Visual Studio. One of them was the Navigate To feature that I showed about typing to any, opening any file or any symbol. And that one is actually available in Visual Studio 2010. How many of you use Visual Studio 2010 already? Majority? 2008? Same people? 2005? 2003? VC6? 5? All right. Okay, well, hey, it worked today. So this is the simulator. This is actually what I was trying to show you. Sorry, apparently when I put it in Hibernate, it wasn't too happy. So this is the simulator. It's running your application inside the little window that you know, basically as if it was running in the full screen. You can do nice things here, like change the ratio, the resolution. You know, go on a 27-inch, see what that looks like. And when we were actually creating this application, when we put it up into 27-inch mode, we noticed that we have to do something with the piano picture because they get really big. You can no longer do them with your fingers anywhere. Or you can do things here like, you know, how is my app? This is the touch emulation that I was talking about. You know, pinch and zoom emulation. Let's do rotating the screen, okay? We're going to rotate the screen 90 degrees, see how our app responds to that. Okay, so I can see here that I've actually listened to this message and done something proper to layout. One of the nice things about the XAML infrastructure is that it does this actually a lot of the automatic layout. You could just make some single calls, modify one part of it, and then it takes care of auto-layouting the rest for you. So it has a very nice layout engine. Let me get it back. Oh, now it's upside down. Good. There we go. All those refreshes and all of that, that's work in progress, you know. When you get this, it's not going to be like that. All right. So here I can stop debugging. I could have also, if I had a real device, do a remote debug. It will detect the devices that I have and automatically deploy the application and launch it there. Okay. So now I like my application. I debugged it. I think it has everything I need. I'm ready to, you know, put it to the App Store. How do I do that? On the solution or the project, I can go and say Store. Create a package, okay? And there, I'll get the UI that tells me how what do you want to create. I have two options. One of them is go put it in the store. If you have already a store token, you already have a, you know, the setup yourself in the store, then you could use that with your credential and we'll update your application to the store in your name. Or, which the one that I will choose today, which is just build it locally. Why would you want to build in a package locally? Let's say you had somebody, a buddy, or a different machine, or a tester, or something that you wanted to play with your application. You're going to create a package for them that they can go and install on the other machine manually without having to go through a store to get it so that you can do testing. So that's what I'll do today, okay? So I'm going to say, go build a package. Include the symbols and build, okay? It's going to take a little while. Build a package for me. While it's doing that, I'll tell you what's happening with that package. So a Visual Studio takes your executable, your symbols, the manifest information about your project, and there was a window called the, and I didn't show it now, but there's something called the package editor. You can go and give your application a name, specify what its icons are, a bunch of configuration like that. So it goes and packages that stuff as well and puts them together in one file. It's called the appx file, appx file. The appx file is just pretty much a cab or a zip file. You could rename it as a zip and double-click on it and open it. I'll probably actually do that and show you. And it has everything that you've created. Imagine the release directory in your solution. That's what it takes with a couple of other things, puts them together and tries to and starts to upload them to the store or leaves them there for you to copy to the test machine. Okay? Okay, so now we're done with this. I could go open the directory. I'm pretty sure I put it on the desktop. Magical music. Packages. Here you go. Test, that's the one we created. You will see also it has a folder called dependencies. Anybody already deploys the C++ runtime with their application? couple. Okay, so your application uses the C++ runtime already. If you have like a VC6 all the way to 2010, we have a what's called a VC++ runtime. You know, it has the libraries that you link with, and MFC and STL and CRT and all of that good stuff. And these are available in DLLs, or you can statically link them in your application. For Windows, and typically you have to worry about how you deploy this thing. You could either statically link it in your application, then just deploy your executable, or you could take those DLLs and find a way in your installer to put them first, or there's an executable that we provide, which is vcredis.exe, run that or whatever. Find a way to get those DLLs that your application needs as part of your install. With App Store installs, you no longer need to do that. We automatically package the dependencies for you, and it goes to the store. This is, for example, all the C++ libraries packaged in one file, and this goes up to the store with your application. As the user is downloading, if they already have that read, you know, those dependencies, they don't need to download them again with your app. They just download your app. If they never had them, Microsoft Windows 8 takes care of getting those down for you, so you don't need to worry about the dependencies. If you look at that apex file, I'm just going to, for curiosity's sake, rename it to a .zip. Okay, now I can actually open it. And you'll see it's pretty much a zip file. It has everything here. Where's your application? Can anybody spot something that sees the application? There you go, right? This is your application with a bunch of images that I put for the application and everything that you need there. All right, so you saw how to use the XAML designer. For Windows 8, we actually pretty much focused a lot of our effort in Visual Studio 11 on making sure that you have a prime Windows 8 experience. As a C++ developer wanting to create a Metro-style application using XAML, you'll have a great experience all the way from, you know, in file new project to designers to an IDE editing experience that's tailored for that to the language that you use to create Windows runtime, the debugging, the packaging, the upload to the App Store, all the way from the end to end. We've made sure that that is a very strong experience. I promise that if you have time, I'll show you how to do the thing from scratch. We have a couple of minutes, so maybe I'll try to do that. Instead of showing you an application, I just wanted to show you what you get. You know, if you go download the developer preview and you have nothing, you just want to create a new application, what that looks like. So I will do that. File, close solution, new project, okay? And I'm going to create a new Metro-style application, C++ application, and I will call it camera demo, okay? When I get that, it's going to create a project with much like the layout that I had shown before, only you can actually see it because it has fewer stuff. There are your precompiled headers to make your compilations faster. You have an app.xaml and a mainpage.xaml. Mainpage.xaml is just a blank page, black background, no controls, nothing at all. The XAML file itself has the header file as a backing store. The header file doesn't have anything. And the CPP file is equally almost empty with, you know, just initializing that page. Okay? You can build that and you run it. You'll see it doesn't really have anything inside. The reason I want to build it is I wanted to show you some of the files that we automatically generate when you compile XAML. So let's say here XAML.h includes mainpage.g.h. .g means generated. Okay, so you can... That's the XAML compiler. When it was compiling your XAML file, generated that. You can open it, and you will see that it has your camera demo, and it has the rest of your class with the controls that you've added. Okay? So if I go here in the XAML page, and let's drag a button, nice button here. And we'll also create an image. Okay. Save this and go back to, yes. And go back to the generated file. It told me that the generated file was changed. So do you want to reload the new one? So I did that. If I look now in the generated file, yes, please. Modified outside the editor. You want to reload it? Yes. Well, didn't really reload it. I can do that. Open it again. I shouldn't have done that with it open. Apparently that's a bug. But it goes and it creates those files for you so that you can play with them. If I build this and run it, not sure if it's going to run now. Yes. I should just close this file. It's upsetting the IDE. Okay, and I run it. I get my button in the picture, right? Nothing happens, but I can go on that button. Let's go back to our XAML, and let's say we want to add an event handler for this one, right? Let's view that property page again. On click. On click. And then there, I can add the code that I want to handle that. That's pretty straightforward, and then the rest is up to you. It's a very straightforward experience. So this is a number of articles that we already wrote a lot of MSDN documentation about how to use this. You're going to get the slides, so when you get the slides, if you click on the links, you'll see a lot of resources that tell you how to build XAML application, what the different controls are in XAML, what the different methods are in each, class for each control, how the runtime works, all the WinRT APIs, all of that stuff. You'll find them in the links. And I'm putting this slide on behalf of our usability team. Back home in Seattle, we have a team that is focused on improving the usability of Visual Studio. And for us, as people who work on the Visual Studio team, we often try to meet with customers before we actually ship the product, to try to get early feedback from them about how things work, what works, what doesn't, how should it be tweaked before we go. Sometimes we even do it early enough where we haven't even started working on something, but we have a few ideas in mind, and we're thinking of going either this way or that way. And we meet with customers to show them some prototypes done on paper. And we show them some paper prototypes and get their feedback on that. It's a very great way for you to get early view of what Microsoft is going to be working on. It's a very good way for us to get feedback from real people who actually use our product. So if you're interested in participating in this, and they do this all around the world, and part of the team is going to be coming to Europe soon, and that's why they told me to actually put it on my slides here, is you can just go up to this link, bit.ly/cppdeveloper, and it'll ask you for sign-up information. If you sign up, they will call you, and they will see if it's convenient for you to meet maybe this time or next time or something. It's a very good thing for us, and I think it's a very good thing for you as a developer to help influence how we create our new products. So if you have a time to do that, please, I encourage you to do it. And that's pretty much it for XAML and C++. So if you have any questions, we have a few more minutes we could take them. Yes?
Will macro style application also support OpenGL?
Was there a remainder to that question? Or
yeah,
is that it? Okay. So will metro style applications support OpenGL? Metro style applications will support DirectX. So you should be able to create 2D, 3D applications using DirectX. The Windows Developer Preview that we have has no support for OpenGL whatsoever. I don't know what the future holds. Can't talk about the future, but for now, I know that what we've shipped has no support for OpenGL. The support that's there is for DirectX. So you want to be able to do 2D and 3D applications, DirectX is the way to do it. It's pretty optimized for Windows, and it works very well that way. Do you currently do OpenGL applications?
Yeah.
Okay. I'd love to chat with you after the talk to know a little bit more about what you do.
Sure.
Yeah, but we don't have support for that in the developer preview, and that's not planned. I hear you. I mean, it's a tough trade-off. It's certainly tough. More questions?
Is it possible
to derive
from the UI
controls?
Okay.
Yeah. Is it possible to subclass the XAML controls and do your own things? No, not yet. Yeah. It would be good though. You can do custom manipulation in a different way, but not subclassing them. You can create custom controls though. So one of the things that you can do is create a custom control, and then you can use the custom control in any of the other XAML files that you have. So that's a possibility. Go. All right. Well, thank you very much. Thanks for coming.